We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Hallowmay. Welcome to Hallowmay. You are listening to Lore Keepers, a lore building podcast where we talk about eons of history, heroes and villains, and the forces that whirl about it all. I'm Frank.
And I'm Frank.
And I'm Carter. And whether you're interested in stories, looking for your own inspiration, something, if you want to participate, all that stuff, you've probably heard it before, because it's episode 40, everybody, and we're getting close to the one-year anniversary of this podcast, which I've momentarily forgotten the name of. Lore Keepers, it's written right here in the opening. Hi, everyone.
This is Frank.
And we're Lore Keepers, and this episode we really just wanted to bring you behind the scenes to hey everybody, this is a famous podcaster, Frank, of the Lore Keepers, and for this one we thought we would open it up, you know, really just like let the innards show. And
this is getting gross.
Yeah, it's disgusting. So this week we're talking about the drow, so that's kind of...
That's pretty gross.
Topical. It's topical enough. Body horror. But before we get into that...
Too real.
Are we gonna... For the one-year anniversary, are we gonna update this? I'm kind of wondering if we're gonna update this, because I do want to know how you are, Carter. But, man, we've been saying the same thing for almost a year now.
Yeah, I mean, we could maybe trim it down.
Well, especially if there's a bunch of rambling in the middle of it.
Yep.
Carter.
I'm doing well, Frank. I hope you are also doing well.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just
good.
Ate a can.
Oh, you're cutting it down. Yes.
I mean, I'll make it bigger again. I ate a can of black beans about 10 minutes ago, and bag of rice that I microwaved.
So you're like ready for Fart Town in a little bit here, huh?
Well, I mean, yeah, it happens, but you know, farts are natural.
Wait a minute. You, bag of rice, like you like ate a bag of hot rice, like you didn't cook it beforehand?
What do you mean? Of course I cooked it.
You said you ate a bag, you put a bag of rice in the microwave.
I bought a bag of rice that is microwavable.
Wait, like you had water?
No.
I don't understand. How do you cook rice without water?
It's a bag of rice that you cut open... Stick it in the microwave for a minute and 30 seconds, and bam.
Get the fuck out of here. Are you serious?
I'm completely fucking
serious.
You
need to send me a hyperlink of this. I need to see this bag of rice, this magic rice.
All right.
I thought rice, like, needed water.
I think it's water in it.
So this is, like, non-dehydrated cold rice that you're microwaving.
Well, I mean, it's room temperature.
Non-dehydrated, room temperature. So, like... Moist room temperature rice, a bag of moist room temperature rice you threw in the microwave?
Yeah.
And I'm Frank.
Here, yeah, Seeds of Change. This is the one I buy.
Seeds of Change? Okay.
Yeah, there's an Amazon link for you.
Seeds of Change. Where did this go? This went into the feed. I just opened up like three different little board games. Oh, wow. I feel like I've seen these before. I guess I'm just surprised that this actually...
Yeah, I quite like the Caribbean-style rice. The brown red rice with chia and kale is pretty good.
So my week was pretty great.
That's good.
This is a mess. I mean, the fun thing is that later I can just iron out all of these breaks and places where I interrupt you as you're talking about, you know, microwavable bags of rice.
You questioned me about it.
But I'm not going to.
Okay, but, like, I'm just explaining myself when you ask me to. Okay.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Carter. You're following the rules.
Yeah, it's real quick to do, because, you know.
This is, so, all right, so is this the worst intro we've ever done?
Or the best?
I mean, it's It's pretty bad. I don't know if we've done one worse than this
before. It's the first time I've ever purposefully messed it up for you.
Okay. I'm putting on my serious pants now. And also, hold on, gotta just
took off my silly shirt, and I'm putting on the vest of solemnness.
I've just reattached my girdle of temperance, so I'm ready to go.
And my shield of faith.
First level spell, concentration, plus 2 to AC. Bonus action.
So this week, I don't know, this week was fine for me.
That's good to hear, Frank.
This is not salvageable. I don't know, it just snowed a lot here. Like, over a foot and a half.
I got it.
Over a couple of days.
Yep. Thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you've enjoyed this exploration into the lands of Sidar and the realms beyond, and perhaps found some good material to add your own stories. You can reach us at the Lore Keepers on Twitter.
So this week we're talking about the drow.
So, Frank.
But first, how are you? Okay. All right. We're talking about the drow this week.
What is a drew?
It's, a drow is a subterranean, well, doesn't have to be subterranean, I guess, but usually is elf.
Okay. Can you describe them in any other way?
Sure. Do you want me to do it? I can start us off.
I mean,
I do have my serious pants on. Very I think good. I am at a bonus here.
I think I might need to go get some whiskey at least.
Okay. All right. So everybody, thank you for listening to all that terribleness. If you skip forward several minutes till it sounded like we were actually talking like sane human beings, this week we're going to talk about drow. I'm going to say it that weird every time. And the drow are a pretty common, so they're a trope that shows up fairly regularly in fantasy. They're not always called that, like sometimes they're just called dark elves, but being called drow is oftentimes something that then strongly associates certain traits that you, like, connect with them. So, for instance, I believe Pathfinder also has drow, and, like, I think Dota has drow as well, which is kind of weird. In those situations, like, a drow is a dark elf, and, typically it means like they worship like evil gods or goddesses. They have like skin that's like kind of like grayish.
I see like purplish. Fashion.
Yeah, kind of a grayish purplish. White hair typically. And then like, yeah, and in D&D, they typically have matriarchal societies. They have a thing with spiders. And a big one is that they live underground. So like in D&D, there's a lot of stuff about the Underdark. And the Underdark is just a place where, like, you'd find the drow. Halamay also has drow.
And we also have an Underdark.
Yes, we also have an Underdark. I think we probably, if we ever make any syndicated shit, we'll just change the name to, like,
The Beneath.
The Down Below Place. The yep. Bad Down Below Place. Spooky. Very spooky. Down. Yeah.
And why are these elves in this down below place when they could be in the land of sunshine and rainbows?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I don't know why for D&D's sake, like in the Forgotten Realms.
We're talking about Halamay here, right?
But
I don't know if you've ever been on this podcast.
This is my first time, as is pretty obvious by the way that I'm approaching this. Yeah, in Halamay, we wanted to talk about the drow because they're a... they're an interesting race that I never really put a lot of thought behind what exactly they were about. And we were discovering last episode that we basically had some open spots. We had like enough structure to feel like there's like a very loose skeleton of ideas. And we wanted to maybe flesh those out more and connect them. So in Halamay, the reason why the drow live underground is because basically magic doesn't reach that far down. It used to, but it doesn't anymore. And there's a reason behind that, but I'll explain that some other time. For beings, like, for any being with a soul, magic is a good thing. Because it basically nourishes the soul, provides it the opportunity to express, to emote, to feel, and to act, like, with motility, to, like, have choices. All that stuff flows from magic, and so when you're on the surface, you have the ability to, like, basically, you are nourished by it. The drow... it's the difference between, like, maybe you could kind of think of it as building a building on a fault line or something, where Yeah, it's like an earthquake in terms of, like, they just don't have the structural support for it, because they don't have souls. So, like, everything that happens to them when waves or sort of, like, flows of mana rush over them, it causes them strife, it causes them troubled nature. They have a lot of issues with it. And this is true for all of those races that don't have souls, and they're called the Riven. So you can kind of think about them as being, like... we actually talked about this last week, sort of, that they have anima. So, like, all things have anima. Anima is different from a soul. And it's basically, like, the instinctual mechanisms that cause a person to be. In Helame, for instance, without including exceptions, because I'm sure we could think of some really cool exceptions, animals don't typically have souls. So, like, an animal just has its instincts to run on. They just, they know that they should do the way that they just are born to do. You know, it's like the bear that it learns to fish from the same places that its mom went to, right? I mean, we also have instincts as humans, you know. There's, like, even as babies, we, you know, that sense of feeling like you're being watched is basically your subconscious having all these signals of things that it's looking for to feel like there's predators around that are firing off. And we don't know why we feel that way. We just know our brain is telling us that something feels off. We don't have to process that information, right? That's instinct. But the way that anima works is that it has a much, much higher level of bounds than what we typically think of instinct. So, like, you can even have societies, hyper-advanced, complex societies with their own rules and codes, that's all like an instinctual thing. Like, when you're born, you just know how you should act to be appropriate to society. Doesn't necessarily mean you follow that way. You have that nature already built in. So, as far as, like, what separates them from other races, all of this said, the Drow, despite the fact that they are tormented by the presence of magic if they're around it, you know, they burrow down into the ground to avoid it. Despite that fact, they're still obsessed with magic. They basically treat it as their god. How's that for a good foundation?
I think that's good.
Okay.
You know, someone might be curious as to how they ended up being soulless, given that they were originally elves, maybe?
Yeah. I suppose we can, I mean, I think we can go back to some of those things as they become pertinent. Where should we start, though? Like, I think there's probably...
Well, these are the questions I have.
Yeah.
These might be helpful. So the first is, right, the origin, which is an interesting concept in and of itself. And we have, you know, more things to say about the origin of the Riven than we'll say in this podcast, this specific episode.
Right. I mean, I think we'll do a separate episode for that. Yeah.
But then there's also why they're so obsessed with magic, which may also be slightly tied in with their origin.
Right.
And then the kind of what we mentioned last time, where it's like, you know, this like age spell they've been doing, like what's going on with that, and then the state of the affairs in Avum Quintus is the typical thing we do.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. No. So these are some good starting points. I think for my side, what I want to explore is are sort of the more. I think you're thinking like vertical things, and I'm thinking lateral things. And if we combine the two, we'll probably get some good bases. So I'm thinking things like culture and like what is their society look like? What is the daily life of, I don't know, the Drow look like? Or what makes them different from the other races? But I do like your... I do like your idea of like kind of setting up a base. So like, for instance, what Carter's talking about is last episode, we kind of decided that the Drow were the first people in the first beings in recorded history to do what is called an age spell. We're not going to get into the specifics of what that is. If you're curious, just check out the last episode, episode 39, because we get into that's what the whole episode is about. But what they do is and so this is the idea that I kind of floated, and I don't know if I articulated it very well, but I think my thought was. So, like, I had previously, understood all of the Riven as basically becoming soulless because they lost their souls to a pact that they made with some archdevil. They were seeking power for whatever reason, and a bunch of different races got together as a convocation and talked to this archdevil, and the archdevils took away their soul. And my thought was, what if that seed of whatever was left when people were in Avum Secunda, you know, the little kind of dry nut of what could be a soul if it ever had the nourished, like you know, the thing that's the potential of a soul. What if in their desperation during like late Avum Secunda, or maybe sometime during just Avum Secunda in general, which to the listener, Avum Secunda just means it's just the second age, and it was just a time when magic was gone from the world. My thought was basically like, what if they were actually separate from all the Riven, and either they were a proto-Riven, they came first, or they came after whatever that happened to make the Riven the Riven, and they, like we were kind of talking about, were attempting to synthesize souls out of doing something via an age spell.
I like the idea that they're a proto-Riven. I like that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe the other races got inspired to try and do the same thing by following their example, but they also couldn't do an age spell because they weren't good enough at it or weren't patient enough for it or something like that. And so they were just like, hey, let's just talk to a demon.
I also, I love this idea where it's like, I'm getting some very radical ideas.
You got some cogs starting to move around.
Yeah. Very radical ideas. Well, what if it's like, what if this group of elves, you know, mm-hmm. like fucking Q dark elves, right? Except they're regular elves right now.
Mm-hmm.
Attempted to do like a crazy age spell utilizing like an entire race of like proto goblinoids, right? Orcs, goblins, that kind of thing.
Sure. Okay, I'm following you so far.
Yeah, and this led when, you know, someone made a mistake. Right, the age spell went horribly wrong, and something terrible happened, causing all the souls of this entire race of goblinoids to go kaput, along with the casters of the spell.
So you're saying that it was the drow, or the what would become the drow, that they became the Riven by trying to do this?
Yes.
Oh, buddy. Okay. Wait a minute. Sorry, you were gonna say something though. Go ahead.
Yes, the question is, what did they do? What were they trying to do?
Well, I mean, I think it was this. I think they were trying to create souls. All right, let me paint you this picture. All right, first of all, we know, following in the tradition of Jeratoken, in Halume, orcs come from elves that were the Riven. The Drow were different. Like the Drow were a separate strain, and maybe that was because they were the spellcasters.
Yes.
You know, maybe the difference is they were the ones who were the conductors, you know, if referencing the previous episode, the ones who were leading the spell, the others were the participants.
Yes.
And so maybe what happened was the elves, let's say, okay, let's paint this picture, right? So the Ash Curse happens. For the new listener, Ash Curse is just the cataclysm that broke the world. It basically went from Garden of Eden to post a meteor that hit, you know, the
dinosaurs.
Killed out all the dinosaurs, right? Yeah, just really just mixing our metaphors here. So the world goes just barren, it's awful, like barely anybody is alive. And so you get these different like little tribes or groups of people that pop up. And a lot of them, in a lot of situations, all the humans are gathered together around elves that they trust. And the reason why is because the elves were made by the gods as to be leaders for the humans.
Guides.
Yes, guides, exactly. Ambassadors almost for the heavens. There are other races that are doing other things, and we can talk about those in a second. Let's pin that for a moment, though, because I think that maybe not every elf was connecting up with other humans. Maybe some of them, for whatever reason, sought solace with other elves. I mean, we even know that, like, later in the Avum, the barren elves become a thing because they separate off from the rest of the elves and say, like, we can't participate in what you're doing because they had issues, like moral issues with the way that elves were treating humans. So maybe we just say there's this different group of elves. Maybe there's a few hundred of them or something. And they feel like the best shot that they have of getting back what was lost, they discover age spells during this time where over slow glacial periods, or maybe, but long before, I think, long before the gnomes discover the potential of crystals, see episode, I think, 3, 2, something like that. You check the podcast description, it'll explain it. Even before that happens, I think that these elves that would become the drow, they discover, wait a minute, I just saw a flash of magic. Where did that come from? And then they write it down in a journal or something, and then later they're going about their daily duties or whatever, and a couple months later they see another flash of magic, and they're like, where is this coming from? I don't understand how this could even exist, because, you know, there's no magic. But this phenomena just kind of happened as a result, and they're like, okay, so what is actually happening here? They start to study it, they break down, they discover that through their daily routine, they were casting an age spell, though they didn't realize it. They're like, oh my god, we have access to this. So they and all the rest of their group start to learn how to weave age spells. Over the time, they figure out, like, hey, we can actually harness this. And finally, after a long time of working through this and their culture developing a tradition of age spells, where, like, literally for a decade or something, they work together to create something that, I don't know, maybe sends a rain cloud overhead or brings life to the, you know, to the ground in some way. After a time, somebody gets an idea and they say, like, wait a minute, I think we can do more with this. I think we can do a lot more. What if we, you know, made our own souls or something like that, or got our souls back or nourished them or something? They try and cast it. It goes horribly wrong because they missed something or screwed up. And as a result, that first group of orcs are created, and the first groups of drow are created. And then, so here's my idea.
Yeah.
What if what happens next is they somehow get it in their heads that they actually, you know, maybe a year out or something, they're like, no, this is actually better. Like, we actually made things better. Yeah, all the orcs ran away or whatever, became their own marauding tribes, but, like, we have to know what it'll do to other races. And so they, like, capture a bunch of Dosumai, a lot of gnomes or whatever, and those become the goblins. You know, they capture a lot of, like, you know, other creatures like dwarves, and they become the Duergar. And they continue to just do this, like, mad genius, mad scientist testing on different races and just keep on bringing forth these different iterations of the Riven.
I like it.
They capture furbolgs and make bugbears, you know, that kind of thing.
Fucking furbolgs.
They exist too. We'll talk about them one day. Episode 432.
Once we're out of everything else.
Yeah, when we can't think of anything. I don't know how I monologued for a while there, but
I like
it. I mean, what do you think about all that?
I think it's excellent. I think that gives us an excellent jumping off point for an eventual episode in the future, which is the origin of the Riven.
Yeah, where we actually, like, break that down and, you know, kind of play out that story, figure out who the main characters are and stuff.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe this was just the stepping stones, right? This was the first drop in the ocean that will become the Riven, because the Riven are a bit numerous.
Yeah, totally. Well, and you kind of think about it as, like, over time, the drow increase, and they do have shorter lifespans than elves, other elves, like, much shorter. And so, you know, maybe they, I don't know, their society adjusts accordingly, and they just end up having a lot more people. But one of the things I was going to say is, I still think, though, that common knowledge is that, oh, it's demons or devils or something like that. You know, maybe the elves actually tried to hide their own past. You know, maybe this was a recent discovery, like, it was recovered in the last few thousand years, and the elves quietly, like, sort of rewrote, or, like, you know, kind of were deceptive about what it was that they uncovered, because it would be shameful to, they would be shamed of the fact that they created orcs and drow, and, or that their progenitors did.
Yes, there's actually on the World Anvil, I can't remember which article it is, but one of the like vignettes I made was it might have been Paris Winfalfenfor.
That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, and it was basically it's a gnome man, so that would be a nim or nam.
A nam. Yeah. Yeah, it's like man backwards, but with a G, because it has to be.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was a name of the it was a name Lorekeeper, I think, from Wendehouses and Warark. But, you know, it's not super important. But basically, what he was saying is that, you know, thanking all the elven historians of the past for keeping all this history alive.
But
I say it. And he says that with a bit of a cynical perspective, because it's like, yes, they have so many excellent, complete records of everything except themselves.
That's true. That's actually true, because we've talked about this before, the Avaril. So If you're wondering what episode that is, we talk about the Avariel.
It was Rachel Typo one.
Yeah. Ghost in the Dream?
Yes.
Let's see. Yes, yeah. So episode 15. Yeah, that one's pretty good. Wow! I just realized that Valley of Claw, Pocket of Soil was like 30 episodes ago.
Yep.
Wow, time flies. No, yeah, so as far as that is, though, like, yeah, we cannot get into that as well, because that's just a whole other thing. But the Avariel also is an aspect. I mean, maybe we will get into that. The elves don't keep a lot of recorded history because they have this sort of dream state that they go into. They go into a trance every night, and during the trance, they experience the memories, sort of, the legends would be a better word, of their ancestors, of elves that came before.
I'm okay with saying Drow don't have it, but due to the lack of soul.
Yeah, you think that soul is kind of the main engine or doorway into the Avariel?
Yeah, I think that kind of racial tide pools are soul connections.
I agree. Actually, yes, I think you're right. So
otherwise,
you have
tide pools.
Huh. I wonder if that means then that each of the different Riven races, when they have tribes or cities or things that they're capable of putting together, like the Duergar or the elves or whatever, that they, like, I don't know, like, maybe, yeah, maybe they don't look anything alike or whatever. There's no kind of continuum that the tide pool suggests.
Yeah, I think it definitely makes sense within Drow society, the idea that while they're incredibly xenophobic and like only other Drow, they're also
barely.
Yeah. They're also incredibly individualistic, and they're all out for themselves.
Yeah. This is, I think, a good transition point. I think we should actually talk about, like, what it looks like to live in Drow society, because I think that way it helps sort of paint a picture of who these... Like, I think you and I have a fairly solid idea of what that looks like, but I think a lot of people are not really exposed to it. It's so different than the societies of, like, the world above.
All right, so shall we begin with, like, a physical description of what these, like, giant caverns look like? Just real quick.
Sure, yeah.
I always imagine when I think of giant drow cities is, like, they're either one giant cavern or, like, a series of connected giant caverns that are fairly close to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Underdark there's all sorts of different landscapes and, like, geography that they take up. So, like our Earth, there are spaces that are particularly just long and winding, and the way that the water moved through the rock to create the space just does not accommodate the human form, or, like, you know, a humanoid form, you know, and it's just, you just have to figure out a way around and through it and do your best. But for there are other parts that, as a result of things that happened during the Ash Curse, there were explosions that happened underground. And as a result, massive, massive caverns were created as the walls of the caverns were seared by the explosion. So it was like it was blown out, like much of the rock just evaporated and instantly turned to magma or just superheated air or whatever. And like there were entire sconces of like caverns the size of football fields and significantly larger. Sometimes regions like over 100 miles across that are just open. And so you have straight up just like environments. So yeah, like geography that exists down there. And I like the idea that the Drow almost have this like, because what it is that for me, that inspires this sense of they having like this grim reflection or this sinister reflection of a life up above, you know, that it's still under an open sky, except that sky has no light in it.
Yeah, it's just, it's so tall you cannot see the top.
Yeah. So... And when it comes to Drow cities, they do form cities. I think their cities probably are usually larger than elven cities up on the surface.
Yes.
Like, I think the elves on the surface feel like they need a little bit more space, but I think everybody is forced into tighter communities in the Underdark because there's so many monsters there already. And I think, you know, in Shadow of War, like, you can look at Morgoth? Minas Morgul, and you see that like green eldritch flame that's just kind of like rising up from the city. Yeah, I totally get that vibe from like if you were standing where you just walked out of like some small, incredibly cramped corridor in the stone, and you like step out into this open cavern for the first time, and you see across it like 6 or 7 miles away, and you just see this city silently glowing green.
Yes.
Reflecting up against the nothing maybe, nearby.
Maybe it's like a thing. Maybe there's like anima smog.
Oh, well, this is actually where I was going to go with this, is the reason why I picked green is because, well, okay, the reason why I picked green is because green is spooky. You can do, like, yep, a spooky green flame. But anima, at least the way that the drow do it, it burns green. And so because the drow are obsessed with anima and like, releasing it and doing something to try and maybe alchemize it into magic or something like that, they are constantly taking, warning, this is kind of gruesome, they're taking people's body parts. So they'll chop off an arm, and they'll stick it on a skewer, and then hoist it up, and they'll cast some sort of spell, or manipulate the mana in it in some way, or the anima in some way, to release. And so, above the hand, like above this rictus claw, there will just be this bright green flame that burns brighter than any lamp, any oil lamp, and burns for longer, and over time that hand just gets more and more like decayed, and like you watch as the skin just turns utterly like black and shriveled, and you know, kind of like tightens around the bones, then the bones start to like, you know, decalcify and like turn to dust within the fingers, and all the while this you know, flame will burn until it is completely burned out.
That's beautiful, Frank.
And I have an idea.
Shoot.
Do you remember the name of the city in Aragon where they like worship the mountain and do you know what I'm talking about? It's, yes, like a really creepy city that's like super fucked up.
I'm looking it up. Varden.
Varden?
Is it, you know, where are is you it sure? Trondheim?
No, Trondheim is where the people of the Varden live, and the Varden are the resistance. No, this is, like, closer to the center of the Empire. Here, I'll just look at an Aragon map. Yeah. Helgrind! That or Helgrind. Yeah, Helgrind. Okay, so Helgrind is also religion, and here's the reason why I brought it up, and let me just float this by you. I think that the drow have a similar vibe. Do you ever... I don't know if you remember this, but like it was kind of a thing among the priests and priestesses of Helgrind that they'd like chop off their own body parts, or like cut their own body like around the shoulders or chest or whatever and bleed, because it was a sign of like a reduction of, you know, because they were ascetic. They were like, oh, the body is evil, and if I chop off the body then like and offer it to Helgrind, I am closer to holiness.
Yes, and then they fed themselves to the Razak.
Yeah, it's really fucked up and horrible. Yeah. What I like about this idea is you get these priests and priestesses, probably just priestesses in drow society because they are a matriarchy, who like it is a sign of devotion to, I guess, just magic then, or gods that they have created out of the concept of magic, where they like are basically no arms, no legs, carried around on like a cushion by a bunch of slaves, and like those all of their limbs, their lips, their eyelids have been cut off. Like they just are these horrifying rictuses of beings. You know, their scalp has been scoured so that it no longer grows hair. And just like their whole body has just been horribly disfigured because it is seen as a way of like, oh, all of me has been offered up to magic.
It's gross.
Yeah, really, really gross. but that's just the high priests or high priestesses. There's probably other stuff going on. I mean, I did mention it's a matriarchy. Unfortunately, it's a pretty horrible example of a matriarchy where male drow typically don't have names. It's very rare for them to be given a name. They're usually just enslaved. And I don't know. It's just bad. It's just bad life.
All right, so we said that their societies are matriarchies. Mm-hmm. So that means rule by women rather than, yes, patriarchies.
Right.
And do we want to divide them by clans as typical? It's like there's several, like, you know, powerful noble families that each have, you know, like small armies and...
Yeah, you know what? This is a place for innovation, because I feel like, you know, what makes that situation different than any of the infighting that goes on with any other elven group? You know, is it just that it's more vicious? Because that's not very creative. There's got to be something more special than that.
Yeah.
Something quintessentially drow about it. Because I think you're right. Like, yeah, I think that there are, like, there's a caste system. There's, like, you know, the lords and, the ladies, queens and empresses of the houses that rule them. Probably no empress. Maybe not even queens. I don't think that they have that much semblance. What makes them different, though? A lot of assassinations.
Yes.
A lot of infighting. Like, a lot of blood. You know, they're a very bloody society.
Yes, I like the idea that, like, anything goes so long as no one can snitch on you.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Okay, just a little idea for flavor. Maybe they're a bloodless society. Maybe they got this idea of there was some weird ideology that came from their ancestors of, like, the elves do not draw blood. You know, maybe that was a thing that was spoken during the time of Avum Secunda, an affirmation that we will not harm another. We do not draw blood, right? Okay. Which is why it was such a big deal when the vampires, like, you know, started to do shit, right?
Yeah.
So the drow, they figured a way around that. They, for whatever reason, still held this high, but they created weaponry that does not bleed you, and it doesn't cauterize you. But what it does is the same thing, you know, that I was talking about with that disgusting image of the hand slowly getting more and more blackened and wrinkled as it has basically, like, its life force, its anima sucked out of it.
Yeah.
What if they created weaponry that, like, instantly causes body parts to decay or whatever, wherever the cut is? So it's like you slash somebody with it, and then the skin around it draws no blood. It just shrivels away from itself, falls dead.
I would have gone for poison myself.
Maybe that's, like, closer to poison, but I'm imagining, like, no pus, no wet, no nothing, but, like, the body should not be that dry on the inside. Like, almost like sheaves of thin paper.
Oh, no. I meant specifically, like, they do their best to avoid stabby and more, like, poison people's drink and food.
Oh, well, you know what? I bet it just manifests itself in many different ways.
Yes.
You know, some clans have this, like, these special blades, you know, where they use it and, like, oh, it just, like, turns the skin to paper and, like, all, like, takes all of the moisture out of a person's body.
There is definitely,
but then there's others who poison.
There's definitely a clan that uses fucking flaming swords.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But they're flaming. The flame comes from, like, a part of a calf or something is the hilt. And it's, like, regularly replaced out. You have, like, a cross section of bone and body that, like, is just inserted onto the end. And it just, like, acts like a, you know, a charge that you then release the anima. And then, disgusting.
Just like, oh, well, my sword's almost out of juice. Better go stab a cat.
Well, you know what that means then? Would have to, the entire sword would have to be carved out of bone in order for it to work as, like, a conduit for anima.
All right, well, now guess what? We have a drow house that uses giant bone swords that are on fire continuously with green flame, this burning anima, and probably the coolest of their swords are probably dragon bone.
Oh, fuck yeah, especially when in ages where, like, dragon bones, you know, dragons don't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, sometimes their bones are still around, you just gotta know where to look.
Possibly, yeah. But also, think about the fact that anima causes, like body matter to decay, so I think they'd have to keep on fueling it. So if, like, you had a dragon bone sword that's still around, like, done something to basically keep it alive that whole time. Maybe there's sort of like a, you know, a sleep mode, like when your iPhone, you know, isn't awake, that you can kind of sock it in there or something like that. But yeah, like you just feed the family sword.
I like to think that maybe, like, dragon bones are so, like, anima, like, complex that maybe they have, like, a near infinite supply.
Or maybe there's some sort of, like, done right. There's, like, a matrix or something that they create within themselves. Or maybe you can enchant it to, like, continually draw anima from nearby things or something. And so, like, if anybody gets closest to it, it just, like, rips away some of its life force.
That's cool.
Yeah. Okay, so this is all, these are all cool flavors. I really like actually every single one of these, but it's still just house infighting. What is the one thing? There's like, there's something drow here, I feel like, a huge opportunity. And I think there is something here, we just haven't found it yet. It's like a thing that doesn't have to do with the infighting itself. Maybe it's an ideology, or it's just the way that they behave in their society that's different from the other races. Their sense of governance and, like, hierarchy.
Yeah. You got offering something?
No, I'm just thinking. So you got a caste system, you've got a religious order, you've got some sort of government with houses. I'm assuming that if a city needs to be run, probably one house just becomes the ruling class, and when they die, probably not an election, there's probably some sort of, like, succession.
Yeah, there's probably either, like, some bloody gladiatorial fight where they each offer up a champion, and whoever's champion wins.
Kind of Wakanda style?
Yeah.
I think maybe they, like, people can prove themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't think I have it right now. I don't know what exactly it is I'm looking for. I'll let you know if I come up with anything else, but we can definitely move on.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's culture. What were some of the things that you brought up? I feel like I want to hit another one of them. Go back to vertical for a little bit.
Okay, so one of the things I'm curious about is, what do they look like now? Avum Quintus.
Yeah, I mean, okay, let's, in order to answer that question, we have to think about, like, how the events of the last several thousand years have affected them, right? So, like, the second casualty, how would that have affected them? I guess, I mean, aberrations being released would definitely affect them, actually, because the aberrations are coming up and out of the bones of Astyos into the world, and they're oftentimes passing through the Underdark to happen, right? So if you've got a bunch of aberrations on the surface, that would be a part of it. And then also during Avum Quintus, they would have actually really remained unaffected by those flows, because that stuff about peace and strife, that stuff really only applied to the surface world, you know, because they're the only ones affected by magic. So I don't think that affects them as much, but I think that the second casualty was really significant. And also, I mean, we could throw in that, like, something having to do with Avum Quintus as the Age of Commerce. Maybe they, like, are, that bug has bit even, like, the darker realms, where maybe even they are more open to trading with the surface. I mean, hell, you could probably treat it almost like the Silk Road in terms of, like, exclusivity for, you know, certain exotic goods or things.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's probably cities. Ooh, what about this? Partner cities. You get a situation where, like, you have essentially an outpost that is built directly above, you know, a maybe a quasi-neutral space, or, like, a city that has several different of the, like, Riven races underneath who have allowed themselves to do business with those above because they vie for the goods.
Yeah.
And so you have, like, regular caravans that make their way down to one city or up to the other one. Hell, there's probably even a district in this, like, outpost city up above that is, like, somehow cut off from the flows of magic so that they can have a place to live.
Oh, yeah, I think there's definitely plenty of, like, I think we definitely see heavily mountainous areas being the place where Riven are on the surface, because just that's a lot of stone to insulate magic.
Yeah. Yeah, and Everest has quite a few mountain ranges.
Yeah, which happen to
several different ones.
They happen to be the favored, you know, kind of environment of the dwarves, which is why the dwarves have such a heated problem with the Riven.
Right, yeah. I mean, the very fact of, you know, the whole siege of Carbulgun, or Cardoon, which brought about Avum Quintus, which brought about the Fifth Age, the Age of Commerce, that was because Riven had taken what was previously a dwarven homehold and, like, overrun it, and the dwarves took it back from them.
Yeah, and this is very much like a classic delve too deep kind of stuff, where it's like, yeah, dwarven mines can end up breaking into the Underdark, and when they do, sometimes they crack open some, you know, caravan ways which the drow go, or the Dorgar, or the orcs.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're like, well, these dwarves made the stupid mistake, now we can just run straight up their mines into their treasuries.
Right. What is the incentive for drow? I mean, among the other Riven races, but we're talking about drow here. What's their incentive for going to the surface? What is it that they'd even want there? If we're going to talk about trade and stuff, I mean, I guess magic, right?
Magical artifacts.
Yeah, that's actually a really fucking great reason to.
I think each house has their own kind of spiel. Like, I think each house is like a very, very specific flavor, like our Dragonbone house.
You have, maybe you have some people called like shard runners or something, and their whole thing is they go up and look for artifacts or things that have Erebor seeds or are related to Erebor seeds, and they'll travel up to the surface and...
Oh, that's a ruling almost house right there.
Yeah, and like almost like there's like, well, I think there might be like one person who is anointed per generation, per house to do this. During a certain time of the year, like they're sent out to basically compete against each other to bring back artifacts and to pillage and to thieve and to steal from the other, like the races above, and to bring it back down. And they go through an incredible amount of turmoil, because they might be spending weeks or even months up above to come back with some artifact. And if they come back empty-handed, it's better if they never came back at all, because they will just be killed outright.
Yeah, though I do think that there are some...
They're master thieves!
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
I do think there are some magical accoutrements or vestments that the drow have specifically created to kind of like shield themselves from magic.
I like that. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense in terms of, like, if you want to be a drow character in a campaign that I run, or even just in the world of Halome, I feel like it's unfair if you can't actually be above ground, like, at all. That would suck. It's just like, well, I guess the campaign's just taking place in the Underdark. Sorry, you can't really be a drow. You can, but you can't.
Yes.
Have fun with your daily chores while everybody else goes off, like, to a dungeon and raids it or something.
And I imagine it's, like, something that's, like, a bit weird, like, a bit, like, not fantasy, but still, like, fantasy-themed. Where it's not, like, it's not just, like, a leather gimp suit. Like, it's not that.
Do you think more, like, technological? Is that what you're saying? You're imagining something technological?
Yeah, it's somewhere between, like, your classic, like, full-on anti-rad suit and, like, a leather gimp suit. It's somewhere between.
Well, I mean, with the drow, it's just a lot of black leather. I mean, that's kind of their whole thing.
Exactly. But it's not, it's like not just a gimp suit. Plus, there's no zippers yet.
Pulling from your past ingenuity, I think there's a shit ton of metal in it. Lots of metal plating and things, because yes. as we decided, metal is very much an insulator when it comes to magical flows.
Oh my God. Like, it looks like pangolin fucking scales.
Maybe it's like, pangolin?
Have you never seen the pangolin scale armor?
Are you talking about, isn't that a thing from Magic the Gathering?
No, a pangolin is an animal. Check that out.
Whoa. Wow. Yes, I'm totally thinking something like that, except it's like metal sheaves instead of the actual like skin of the creature.
Yes.
That's really cool. Yes, and totally. So in that situation...
I bet you there is a creature in the Underdark that you can skin that has, like, anti-magic hide.
Oh, totally. Yes, and that perfectly works for both. I think it's because it has a high metal content, because think of all the minerals down there. You know, like, maybe it's because of the water that it drinks or something. It's just part of the ecosystem that exists down there. This beast just, like, developed this necessary adaptation, or, you know, it evolved in a certain way, and as a result, it's able to just be, like, immune to magic or whatever. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, and I imagine it's, like, this, like, almost, like, black-grayish, really thick hide that they, like, actually, they wear this, like, leather suit. It's like a gimp suit. It's not exactly like a gimp suit.
Keep on using that word.
And then they wear, and then they basically have, like, do you know how Kevlar works in, like, the military stuff?
I don't. So here, is it ceramic?
So Kevlar is very, 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 very dense weave of fabric. But there okay. is they have pockets in the Kevlar to put in ceramic plates.
Okay. Yeah.
And basically, and like, the Kevlar protects
that,
against,
except bars of metal.
Yes, it's literally like yeah, like thin, like very, very thinly beaten, like sheets of like lead or like gold or like whatever is best. Right.
I think it has to be lead. We already know that magic is prevented by an inch of lead, right?
Yes.
And like, I love the idea that they have like this they're almost covered in this leaden suit with this anti-magic shit, and it's like, they're definitely getting lead poisoning, that's for fucking sure. They're not going to live long, and they're probably going to start going insane just from, like, being around it, but, also, they have face masks. They've got to have face masks. Yes. You keep every inch of yourself covered from head to toe, gloves, face mask, everything. If you take it off, immediately it's, like, hit by, like, a strong Arctic wind of, like, magic.
Okay, but let's pause for a second, and I just want to say, lead poisoning doesn't work like that, all right? If you ingest lead, you get lead poisoning. If you inhale lead or, like, get it in your eyes or, like, have a lot of, like, direct skin contact with, like, lead powder, you might get lead poisoning. But in general, you can handle lead fairly fine.
No, but that's what I was... yes. Okay, fair. They're walking around in a suit with lead plates in it. The lead plates are going to create friction against the fabric or leather of it. That's going to start to rub off some of the lead. The lead is going to gotta have to go somewhere. I'm just saying, man.
But they will also wear a face mask.
Like, look, I'm not saying it's going to affect them in, like, a year or even 2 years, but I'm just saying if you're walking around with that much lead a while, eventually, when you get back to the Underdark, you're not going to be the same person you were when you came up.
I mean, it would take a long time, but I understand.
And maybe, okay, sorry, so just amending something from earlier. You know, this whole, like, sending them out or whatever, there's probably a rite of passage that happens once a generation or something for each person, a group of whoever houses for that year. When they reach a certain age, they're then sent out, and it's basically, like, you can't come back until you have something. And so it might be years on the surface that, like, these drow, like, wander until they can eventually come back with an artifact. And basically how significant that artifact is then defines something with their, you know, with their caste later. Like, it allows them higher positions or something.
Yes. Also, this as well, like, lends this idea where it's like, listen, all drow are kind of badass because of this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're a really fucked up society, but I guess badass is a word you could use to describe.
Yeah. It's just like, if you had to fight a drow... Unless they're one of the real newbies, they're gonna probably kill you. Like,
they're basically born and bred for death. Like, yes. their whole thing is that, like, death is not even to be celebrated, more like a mad festival. You know, like, it's something that is like, it is like revelry. They revel in death.
So I have a question.
They lose themselves to it.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So actually, two questions. One, where is this, like, a Halloween thing that this, like, drow are shorter lived?
I think that's actually pulled from the book, I want to say.
Because I'm looking at 5e tools, and I'm not seeing it.
Let me check.
But as you're checking on that, what... Because this is also in 5e tools. Does a half-human or half-elf, half-drow have a soul? Boom.
Let's see. Same image as human. Oh, yeah, you're right. I don't know. I think I like the idea that maybe they are... They're technically capable, before I answer your other question, I think they're technically capable of living up to 750 years. It never happens. Okay. Like, it's like something that happens incredibly rarely where I think death is just too much a part of their society. So maybe like they live to a couple hundred years, but they're typically, maybe it's just that the society kills them by that point. They're
it's just
no
like
longer
no one
used.
Ever lives to old age because they just die.
Yeah, because maybe as you get older, it's more and more likely that the young challenge you to your position because they're just used to house positions being taken up by a new mantle, like, every couple of decades or whatever. And so if you've held on to the same mantle for, like, 80 years or whatever, you become a more attractive target. Because the person who can fell you, you know, is far more likely to be revered, or not revered, but, like, you know, grudgingly respected among the other houses. And so it's basically the older you get, the bigger the target is on your back.
Yes.
Okay.
Now you're answering my next question.
Let's see. What was your other question?
Half-elf.
Oh.
Drow.
I think it just depends. I think that sometimes... Well, hold on. I was going to say it could be either and either, but I'm seeing an opportunity here. Is there a third state?
Half soul?
Like a soul that's locked away or something.
That's a good question, Frank. How deep do we want to get into our metaphysics here?
Maybe they're called like a still or something. And what they are is they're not capable... Oh... This could be it. Yeah, I think I actually already know what this is. Sorry, this is just giving me the feels, because there was a campaign thing previously that happened. So, okay, so in a previous campaign thing, basically what happened was, it's rare, it's extremely rare, but a child can be born without a soul. Ooh. Now, when Halumians talk to each other about that, they say that the child is born without a soul, like, of the knowing races, and it's, like, a horrible thing to happen.
Yeah.
Like, this is awful. It's, like, it'd just be terrible. And if that happens, let's say, you know, it's a dragonborn child, that child is never going to be, you know, what, are you going to send them off to the Underdark to go live with the Durgar or something? They're not going to accept them. And they can't live on the surface without feeling incredible, like, turmoil by the mana that goes over them or whatever. So the best thing that can be done is, like, sort of a procedure that then stills their heart or whatever. You know, it stills the soul and creates, like, a shell of anti-magic around them. So they'll never grow and develop and nourish into, you know, actually having, like, a soul where they can emote and experience things. You know, they'll always, like, kind of struggle to connect with other people or whatever, but at the very least they'll live without that constant torrent of magic around them. And I think that how we were talking about before, so if you want to get into the metaphysics here, like we were talking about before, this idea of like the seed that is born into a person that is, you know, kind of the immutable perfect spherical form of a soul, at least in this, you know, metaphysical metaphor, it's a sphere, you know, and then that, as they go through life, is like you tying a string or like, you know, anchoring a golf ball by a string and then holding that out into like a fast moving river. And so like over time, like let's say there's a lot of leaves in the river and the leaves pass over the golf ball and kind of start to build up like a sediment around it. And based on the direction of the flow of that water, that then builds up sediment pointing in a certain way, and that creates a disposition. So the thing is that these beings, or like when you're born, let's say, okay, so just imagine that you snip off that string and let the golf ball float away. Now all the leaves are floating at the same speed as the golf ball, and the only thing, the frictions, if you will, or I mean, I don't know, there's probably a better description of it via physics, of the forces that would cause the leaves to hold on to the golf ball are no longer there, and so the leaves just drift away. That tension, that presence of, if you think of the river as magic passing over the soul in its atmospheric currents, is what keeps a person's disposition together. And the moment that you cut that string and let the golf ball float along, it no longer has the, like, it loses all personality and becomes immutable again, as though, you know, they never had a personality in the first place.
Yes.
And I think that I see a thread here. So in Avum Secunda, everybody had the little golf ball or whatever, but there was no currents, right? There was no tension to be made. So even if they wanted to build up experiences or whatever, like, it never really happened. So as a result, people, like, lived these, reduced lives.
Yes.
Where they were incapable of picking the stuff up. I think the drow, they don't have souls. So they don't even have that golf ball. That's the difference between the Riven and the other races, is they straight up don't even have that, like, you know, bead that everything then grows on, you know, and layers over, like pearls, like turns into a pearl. They don't even have that. So they're not even capable of, like, developing that stuff. But I think that when you're talking about the half races, I think that what it does is it creates that golf ball situation where, like, it's there, it comes from one of the parents, but there's a lack of the tension, there's a lack of being able to interact with the flows of magic, and as a result, the sediment is never built up.
Okay, so what does that look like in the world?
Well, the way that would manifest in a person is they would have no personality. They would have no semblance of, like, attachment to the world. They wouldn't have, like, any sense of identity, no, barely any sense of self beyond I am, you know, like I am, you know, me as a person, I'm a planner, you know, and I'm all of the things that make us who we are. I am, you know, I love spaces and I like to tell stories and I talk kind
You're
of
very
fast,
fond
you know?
Of vodka.
Right, I'm a big fan of vodka. All of that stuff, those leanings, those favoring one thing or another. In Halime, that stuff would come from the sediment, from the leaves getting caught up on this very silly metaphor. And so they wouldn't have any of that. They wouldn't have favorite things. They wouldn't have passions or drives. They simply would just be.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're getting on.
Yeah, no, we should probably close out here in a little bit. Is there anything else you wanted to touch before we call it? Felt like I was monologuing quite a bit there.
It happens. It's what we're here for. What do I want to revisit? I want to revisit the individual flavors of the houses. I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah. You mean in the future? Or like right now?
In the future.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's anything I really want to talk about right now. I think what I'd be curious about for the future would just be, like, what is the interaction between the aberrations and the drow? And I'd really like to see, like, the societies of the Underdark and how they interact with each other. You know, what is the relationship between Duergar and drow and this Zwerf Neblin? Like, you know, the Zwerf Neblin are actually pretty, like, neutral.
They're okay dudes and dudettes.
Yep. All right, well, I think that pretty much is it for us then, yeah?
Yeah, thank you all for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this exploration into the lands of Sadar and the realms beyond, and perhaps found some good material to add to your own stories. You can reach us at The Lorekeepers on Twitter. You can email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com.
It's a great place to send in your ideas for episodes you want to see, or maybe you want to jumpstart your own campaign or your own world because you've hit a rut and you want us to explore an idea. We'd be happy to do that for you. But any way that you cut it, you can follow us on iTunes, Stitcher. You can follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. At this point, I'm just going to say that. If you like us, give a 5-star rating on iTunes, which helps out a bunch, or even better, spread the word. Tell others about us. Tell your creepy friends.
Tell your goth friends.
I was going to say, tell your creepy friends and also different group of people. Tell all the people who happen to really be into leather and black leather and black shiny leather. You know, no judgment here. No judgment. Yep. I have a leather jacket.
I too have a leather jacket. I very much enjoy wearing it. I have leather shoes. I have leather belts.
Leather's great. I like
leather. Leather is great. I have a leather bag. Oh, that's great. Tell your leather enthusiasts.
Yep.
Tell your BDSM enthusiasts. Tell your fans of the best podcast listening service, Podbean. Tell them. Tell all the guys at Podbean and gals that we really enjoy everything they do to help us, the producers of podcasts, do our thing. And thanks to Josh Silver for his composition of Land of Heroes, the Lorekeeper's theme, and thanks to you all for listening.
Until next time, don't forget, there are always more tales to tell for years to come, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, boom.